the effort waged to defeat the amendment was one of the most dignified and loving and incredible campaigns I've ever seen waged in Wisconsin.
While we lost today, we will not lose the long term.
This was a very intentional attack on all unmarried couples.
I didn't hide the fact this would affect gay people, but we communicated to a majority of voters about issues they cared about, and that is the key to victory.
This is CBS News on Logo. I'm Jason Bellini.
I studied history. I went to Georgetown University. That was by design, knowing I wanted to go into this field.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Mexico City makes national history with civil unions, and Arizona queer couples win tempers of Wisconsin loss, and a gay anchorman meets with pride. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Don Lupo.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 11th, 2006. Mexico City lawmakers approved a measure this week to legally recognize same-gender unions. It's the first such measure by a legislative body in the history of Mexico, a conservative, predominantly Roman Catholic country. Mexico City Mayor Alejandro Encinas supported the bill and is expected to sign it into law. At least one conservative non-governmental group, the National Pro-Life Committee, said it might request a court injunction to overturn it. The bill allows gay and lesbian couples to register their unions with civil authorities, granting them property, pension, inheritance, and even co-parenting rights, but stops short of full marriage equality or allowing the adoption of children. The left-leaning Democratic Revolutionary Party has pushed for the law in the Mexican capital for years. The vote was 43-17, with all the opposition coming from the conservative National Action Party of President Vicente Fox and President-elect Felipe Calderón. Their party has consistently voiced support for so-called traditional families. The bill was also severely criticized by the country's Roman Catholic bishops. Mexico City, with a population of 8.7 million, could be part of an increasingly progressive movement in parts of Latin America for lesbi-gay rights. The Mexican capital appears poised to join the Argentine capital of Buenos Aires and the southern Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul, which have also enacted civil unions legislation. Lawmakers in Costa Rica and Colombia have debated, but not yet passed, national civil union measures.
A twice-postponed LGBT pride parade in Jerusalem, scheduled for November 10th, could not overcome continuing tensions in the Middle East, and a pride rally in a tightly guarded sports stadium was held instead on the outskirts of the Holy City. The planned pride march had been violently opposed for several days by hundreds of rioting ultra-Orthodox Jews, who threatened further violence if the parade proceeded. Dozens were arrested, and there were injuries to several police officers called in to restore order on an almost daily basis. About 4,000 gays, lesbians, and their supporters gathered at Hebrew University's Givat Ram Stadium for the four-hour rally that featured vendors, entertainment, dancing, and speeches. One banner read, "There are different ways to be a Jew." Two men dressed as sperm handed out condoms to participants. The parade was originally planned to coincide with a quadrennial World Pride Festival in Jerusalem, which itself was postponed because it would have been held during the volatile time of an Israeli troop withdrawal from Gaza. The delayed week-long festival was eventually held in August, but the parade was canceled because of the conflict with the Lebanon-based Hezbollah at the time. The latest attempt to hold a pride parade was canceled by Israeli police the day before it was scheduled because of heightened tensions following an errant Israeli shelling in Gaza that killed several Palestinian civilians. The pride events had also been consistently criticized by Muslim and Christian religious leaders in Israel and elsewhere. The Vatican demanded cancellation of the parade for fear of offending the sensibilities of religious communities. Perhaps ironically, the last World Pride event, including a parade, was held in Rome in 2002, despite strong opposition from the Vatican, but there was no violence there. Security was tight in Jerusalem on November 10th, with at least 3,000 Israeli police deployed to secure the pride rally. Earlier in the day, five Orthodox teens carrying brass knuckles, clubs, knives, and a loaded pistol were arrested. Authorities believe they were planning to violently disrupt the event. Police also prevented about 50 LGBT activists who had gathered at the city's Liberty Bell Park from holding a spontaneous march to the rally. At least 20 of them were arrested after they refused to get on buses to the university.
A wave of dissatisfaction with President George W. Bush's war in Iraq and seemingly endless charges of corruption against several congressional Republicans swept Democrats into power in both the U.S. House and Senate in national midterm elections this week. Nancy Pelosi, a liberal Democrat from San Francisco with an excellent record on LGBT issues, is expected to become the first ever female Speaker of the House. A wide-ranging ban on not only same-gender marriage and civil unions, but also domestic partnerships for unmarried couples was defeated in Arizona. Although the margin was slim, it was the first time that's happened to any initiative involving legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples in more than two dozen states where such measures have been on the ballot. But in Colorado, an initiative prohibiting same-gender marriage passed, and a separate measure to create domestic partnerships was defeated. Voters in Wisconsin also passed a constitutional amendment banning same-gender marriage and civil unions by a significant margin, disappointing queer activists who had hoped for a victory there. Bans on marriage equality and civil unions passed in five other states, Idaho, South Carolina, Tennessee, South Dakota, and Virginia, all traditionally red conservative states. But the measures in South Dakota and Virginia won by much narrower margins than in recent years elsewhere, 52-48% in South Dakota and 57-43% in Virginia. It's clear that fear-mongering around same-sex marriage by the GOP and the extreme Christian right is fizzling out, said Matt Forman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. It doesn't have the juice it had just 2 years ago. People are getting sick of it.
As if to confirm Forman's comments, Massachusetts lawmakers meeting in a special joint convention this week delayed a vote on a proposed amendment to the state constitution to limit marriage to heterosexual couples. Proponents had hoped the measure would go on the 2008 state ballot through a complicated process of consecutive legislative approvals, but the delay appears to have killed its chances of ever going to the voters. In a procedural maneuver, lawmakers voted 109-87 to recess until January 2nd, the last official day of the session. Because they didn't formally adjourn, it would seem to prevent termed-out Republican Governor Mitt Romney, an outspoken opponent of marriage equality, from ordering the legislature back into session over the next 2 months. Speaking on behalf of the over 8,000 queer couples who've legally married in Massachusetts since the Supreme Judicial Court ordered equality in 2003, openly gay and married state Senator Jarrett Barrios said in an emotional floor speech that, "You don't have to live next to us. You don't have to like us. We are only asking you today to end the debate so that we can sleep easily knowing that we will at least enjoy the same rights the rest of you have enjoyed for time immemorial." The action came 2 days after Massachusetts voters elected African-American Deval Patrick, a marriage equality supporter, as the state's first Democratic governor in 16 years. Democrats were also elected to all of the statewide offices.
Democrats Barney Frank of Massachusetts and Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, the two openly lesbian-gay members of the U.S. House of Representatives, easily won re-election. Out candidates also fared well in races at the state and local level. At least 67 candidates backed by the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund won election, including 34 to state legislatures. Among them were Patricia Todd in Alabama and Kathy Webb in Arkansas, the first open lesbians or gays ever elected to public office in those states. Al McCaffrey became the first out candidate ever elected to the Oklahoma state legislature. Former state representative Ed Murray became the first openly gay state senator in Washington. And Jolie Justice was elected as the first ever openly lesbian or gay state senator in Missouri.
LGBT activists nationwide delighted in the defeat of several high-profile anti-queer incumbents, especially Republican Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, who lost by double digits to moderate Democrat Bob Casey. Santorum, the third-ranking Republican in the U.S. Senate, has been outspokenly anti-queer and a leading proponent of the so-called Federal Marriage Amendment. He made headlines 3 years ago when he warned that the Supreme Court ruling that struck down sodomy laws would lead to the legalization of man-on-dog sex. Equality advocates also cheered the defeat of anti-queer Republican Senator Mike DeWine in Ohio. His Democratic challenger, Congressman Sherrod Brown, has a strong record in support of LGBT rights. And incumbent Republican Senator George Allen of Virginia, who abandoned a moderate veneer in the past few years to support the Federal Marriage Amendment and oppose even employment protections and hate crime laws, lost to moderate Democrat Jim Webb in what turned out to be the final national vote count, giving Democrats control of the Senate.
Republicans in the House of Representatives, targeted by activists for their anti-queer records, were also sent packing by voters, including Congressman Clay Shaw of Florida and John Hostetler of Pennsylvania. But Marilyn Musgrave, the Colorado Republican who's been the lead House sponsor of the Federal Marriage Amendment, survived a strong Democratic challenger backed by LGBT groups.
a non-discrimination ordinance in the city of Ferndale, Michigan, finally passed. It was the third time since 1991 that a queer-inclusive human rights measure was on the ballot, and a city charter amendment banning bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity was approved by a wide margin in Corvallis, Oregon.
And finally, Kim Koko Iwamoto, a 38-year-old attorney, won election to the Hawaii State Board of Education, and according to national queer advocacy groups, has become the highest-ranking transgender elected official in U.S. history. She came in third in the race for three seats on the 14-member board, which oversees the island state's 285 public schools. Iwamoto, who was born on the island of Kauai and attended a Catholic boys' school in Honolulu, earned a law degree from the University of New Mexico. She was featured in a handbook on transgender policy there for her advocacy of special restroom facilities on the school's campus after she was repeatedly harassed for using the women's bathroom.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 11th, 2006, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Don Lupo.
From Kosovo to Queer TV, he's covered the world's hotspots. We'll meet Logo anchorman Jason Bellini later in the program. Voters in more than two dozen U.S. states since 2002 have passed amendments to their constitutions, making marriage a strictly heterosexual institution. And it's an issue that's consistently rallied the religious fundamentalist wing of the Republican Party to the polls. Among the eight states where such measures were on the ballot this week, LGBT activists nationwide look to Wisconsin and Arizona as having the best chances of turning back the tide. We have comments by leaders of Arizona's first-in-the-nation defeat of a broadly discriminatory ballot measure, but we'll turn first to This Way Out correspondent John Quinlan in Madison for a report about the loss in Wisconsin. Despite a bankroll of over $5 million and more than 10,000 volunteers campaigning across the state against the measure, Wisconsin voters approved a constitutional ban on same-gender marriage and civil unions by what to some was a stunning margin, 59% to 41%.
The obvious question remains, what happened here in a state with a long history of fairness and the advancement of civil rights? In fact, next year marks the 25th anniversary of Wisconsin's first-in-the-nation law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, and this election marked an almost 2-to-1 re-election victory of the nation's first-ever openly lesbian congresswoman, Tammy Baldwin, for a fifth term. In an interview with WRT-FM reporter Laura Goodconnect, Representative Baldwin's feelings reflected those of many of her constituents.
Congratulations. It's kind of a bittersweet night, though, isn't it?
It really is. On one hand, I'm elated with my own election results and the news that I just heard that the House of Representatives will be under Democratic control next session. I'm heartbroken about the results of the amendment here in the state of Wisconsin. Just told the audience here at Monona Terrace that I think that the effort waged to defeat the amendment was one of the most dignified and loving and incredible campaigns I've ever seen waged in Wisconsin.
In a surprisingly rousing concession speech before a gathering of almost 500 supporters in Madison, Mike Tate, director of Fair Wisconsin, the organization which led efforts to turn back the amendment, was defiantly optimistic in his belief that this decision would be eventually overturned.
My friends, tonight we came up short in our struggle for equality. While we lost today, we will not lose the long term. We will achieve fairness and equality in our state and in our country, in our time.
Among the several linings he noted in the election included the victory of outspoken gay community supporter, the incumbent governor, Jim Doyle, and the defeat of State Representative John Gard in his bid for Congress. Gard had originally introduced the measure.
Today we learned that when elected leaders courageously and unequivocally speak out against these measures, they win. And that when other so-called leaders jump on the bandwagon of anti-gay extremism, we know that they end up in the unemployment line. And that is a very good thing for this state, and we should be very proud of that.
In And so the question remains, why was it Arizona, not Wisconsin, to be the first state to defeat one of these hatred-driven amendments? Ironically, polling results showed that the Foley and Hagerty scandals, while also hurting Republican incumbents, quite possibly raised the worst fears about gay people in outlying areas of the state, reversing previous gains. Part of the answer, however, may also lie in looking at Dane County, where Madison is the county seat. Here our neighbors know us well, and they joined us by voting to turn back the amendment by a margin of almost 2-1. As a campaign and fundraising effort, the Fair Wisconsin campaign against the amendment was marked by some great successes in the depth of the bipartisan support it generated, its ability to mobilize progressive faith communities, its effectiveness in mobilizing non-traditional voters statewide. And yet I'd argue the TV commercials and canvassing efforts alone will never be the answer. Despite our best efforts, in the end, in the latest polls, less than half of all Wisconsinites today admit to even knowing a gay person. And so we return to the most powerful lesson that our movement has taught us. People won't vote against us if they see us as their family, friends, and neighbors. That work may take many years, but those efforts can and will continue to produce important changes for everyone. For This Way Out, in WRTFM community-sponsored radio, this is John Quinlan.
In Arizona, generally viewed as a politically conservative state, opponents of legal recognition for queer couples almost certainly lost, although the margin was only about 3 percentage points, because their ballot measure went much further than banning same-gender marriage or civil unions. It would have also stripped all couples registered as domestic partners in the state, whether same-gender or heterosexual, of their rights, such as health benefits and hospital visitation. In order to maintain government benefits that they would lose through marriage, a notable number of heterosexual senior citizen couples have joined queer couples in registering as domestic partners in Arizona's largest county and cities. Senior couples were prominently featured in the campaign spearheaded by Arizona Together, the LGBT-led group formed to fight the ballot measure. They raised $2.1 million and mobilized more than 18,000 volunteers to campaign against the measure. Their leaders credited long-term strategizing, the use of polling and focus groups to formulate a successful campaign message that voters would understand and relate to, and staying on message as the keys to victory. Joe Juhas is with Reister, a political consulting firm that worked with Arizona Together on the campaign.
Every ballot campaign and candidate campaign, very honestly, has certain responsibilities. And I think one of those key responsibilities is to inform the voters not simply of the intent of a ballot measure, but its consequences. And I think we fulfill that responsibility. I can't say the other side did that. They talked about the intent, but they never did talk about the consequences. And in fact, when they were faced with questions regarding the consequences, they simply refused to answer them.
Veteran openly gay Arizona Republican state legislator Steve May, the treasurer of Arizona Together.
We didn't hide the fact that this was the gay marriage ban. We didn't hide the fact that this would affect gay people. But we communicated not just to our donor base, we communicated to a majority of voters about issues they cared about. And that is the key to victory.
This was a very intentional attack on all unmarried couples.
Kirsten Sinema chaired Arizona Together.
The proponents disguised it as attack simply on the gay community because of the political capital that they thought they could buy from that. The good news is that Arizona voters really responded to our message of unity, and I think our name reflected that, Arizona Together. And Arizona voters understood that we were all in this together and that all unmarried people would be affected.
You know, not every municipal government in Arizona offers domestic partnership benefits. There is now, I believe, going to be a desire on the part of many communities to do that.
Again, Reister political consultant Joe Juhas.
Municipal officials who perhaps were reluctant to venture in that area before that now feel, whether we like it or not, you know, they're politicians. And they're going to want to have a sense of security before they go down a certain path. Well, we have provided that sense of security now. The business community that offers those types of partnership benefits, I believe, again, are going to feel more comfortable doing so. I think that the Arizona GLBT community has clearly established itself now as a political force that could become, and in fact is influential, in all matters of public policy. And that's something that, you know, frankly, I really didn't focus on until the last few days. As I just hear the buzz around the state, what a tremendous achievement this was.
We'll let Arizona Together Treasurer Steve May have the final word.
I just want this to be the beginning of a new trend for the GLBT community for sure, but a new trend in American politics. And I think we've hopefully developed a model that will work in other places and provided some hope and inspiration for people across the country that, you know, we don't have to put up with the extremists winning the elections all the time. We can win, and we should, and we will.
That was Steve May of Arizona Together, and with John Quinlan in Madison, Wisconsin, I'm Greg Gordon reporting for This Way Out.
Hi, this is Georgina Beyer. I'm an MP in the New Zealand Parliament, the world's first transsexual to have been elected to such a position. You're listening to This Way Out. Stay out and proud.
Hello, I'm Dr. Robert Simmons, Jr. of Lebanon, Ohio, a longtime This Way Out listener and donor. In memory of my mother, Mabel Simmons, I'm issuing a matching challenge to supporters of this volunteer-driven nonprofit operation. Please visit thiswayout.org to see how your help to keep this program on the air will now be worth twice as much. You'll also get a tax deduction if you're in the United States, and you'll find some unique holiday gifts there too. Again, please log on to thiswayout.org. We'll all be very thankful.
Logo is a U.S.-based digital cable television channel featuring programming aimed at the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities. Viacom's MTV Networks division launched the venture on June 30, 2005. The venerable CBS TV network provides news for the channel, and a young gay man named Jason Bellini delivers it. This Way Out's Steve Pride reports on the reporter, who's much more than just another talking head.
This is CBS News on Logo. I'm Jason Bellini. Marriage versus civil unions. That's the new hot debate in New Jersey.
I'm Jason Bellini from CBS News on Logo. CBS News does the news for Logo. We are the vendor of news to Logo. And CBS News puts its brand name on the news.
As the sole news anchor on Logo, the gay cable channel, Jason Bellini is the new face of gay journalism in America. It is a really nice face. But more importantly, the seasoned former CNN correspondent brings an impeccable news background to the job. Bellini cut his teeth reporting from war-torn Kosovo and has filed award-winning field reports on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He reported on the aftermath of 9/11 from both New York City and Afghanistan. And as an embedded reporter with an infantry marine unit, he covered the invasion of Iraq and was one of the first CNN correspondents to reach downtown Baghdad.
I was not a journalism student. I studied history. I went to Georgetown University. And that was by design, knowing I wanted to go into this field. Some people had told me, listen, you can learn skills through internships, through working in this. If you decide this is a career, you're going to be doing this the rest of your life. You'll learn how to do it. So pick something you enjoy and develop some knowledge that may be of use to you in understanding what you're covering. And my experience at CNN was as a field reporter for 4 years. And got to see a good portion of the world in that time. The most troubled places during that time, Afghanistan, Iraq, was in Israel, Palestine a number of times as well. How do I, you know, get into being a reporter? I sort of went my own route. And that involved buying a video camera and just going off places and trying to come up with stories on my own and trial and error. Figuring out how to do journalism.
Jason Bellini's biggest break in broadcasting has become a legendary example of initiative.
I was working for CNN as a production assistant, running around with scripts, putting microphones on Judy Woodruff and Bill Schneider and Wolf Blitzer. And on my own time, would go around and shoot stories with my camera and then edit them in the edit bays when they were free. CNN DC was a non-union shop, so I could go and do my own thing and then show my work to people. Most of my stuff was unairworthy, but eventually I had a few things that were decent enough, and they put them on the show for high school kids. And then the war in Kosovo broke out, and I said, I'm going to go. I want to be over there. I know no one is going to send me over there. I've got to figure out my own way, but I'll regret if I don't go. And the NATO bombings began, and I says, you know, I can't wait. I have to give this a try. And they got the endorsement of the show that CNN had called Newsroom. It was a show for high school students. Even though I'd only done a few stories from them, they said, okay, well, if you're willing to pay for yourself and you think you can deliver some stories for us, you can go over there. And they coordinated with the international desk for me to feed my material from their facilities in Albania. That's where the coverage of the refugee crisis was focused at the time. And it worked out. And what ended up working out was I helped out other correspondents during those several weeks that I was there. And then by the time it was time to go home, they asked me if I wanted to stay. And I said, of course I do. And my boss at the time in Washington, she wasn't entirely thrilled by that. I ended up having to resign my position in D.C. in order to stay over there, and was in Albania, Kosovo, Macedonia for about 5 months. And that is where I learned the profession. That is really where I got to work with some of the best people in the business, some of the best correspondents, some of the best photographers and producers. They showed me what it was really all about. That was my intensive learning course.
While speculation about the sexuality of certain other newscasters is almost feverish in pitch, Jason Bellini has always been out in the newsroom.
I can't say that my coworkers ever made me feel uncomfortable about being gay and being in war zones because I was not alone. There are several other correspondents who are openly gay and who are in some of the roughest, toughest spots in the world, some photographers as well, who are openly gay and whose manliness, if you want to call it that, no one would ever question. They've earned the right to be whatever they want to be. That was not an issue, but it's still an issue of whether to be out or not when you're in parts of the world where it could be dangerous to be out, where culturally it is still worse than a taboo. It can be the government policy that you get arrested if you're gay.
So is Jason Bellini happy as Logo's gay news anchor after all those years, literally in the trenches for CNN?
Well, I'm 31 years old, and I'm just starting to get a few little specks of gray. And I'm really happy with where I'm at and what I'm doing right now. I'm a happy camper. Yeah, I've got nothing to complain about. Well, that's not true. I'm a journalist. I always have something to complain about, but no one will listen or care. Things are good, and I've got a great opportunity right now, and the gay topic is still interesting, and there's still enough going on that satisfies my intellectual curiosity and keeping me excited about going to work each day and finding out what the next big story is going to be and figuring out how we can best cover it.
This has been a conversation with Jason Bellini. More information can be found at logoonline.com and prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Don Lupo, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, John Quinlan, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how your help to keep this program on the air is now worth twice as much to us, and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WRSU New Brunswick, New Jersey, to NUR Newcastle, New South Wales, KWMD Anchorage and Castleoff, Alaska, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.